Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you today live from Nashville, Tennessee. And we are here talking about the things that matter. And today, I can't think of anything that matters more than our topic of conversation. In Great Britain, the Baroness Warnock, the leading advisor on biomedical ethics there to the British government, has come out with the suggestion, argument, that people who have dementia, especially older people, the elderly with dementia, should be, quote, put down because they are wasting people's lives because of the care they require. They should opt for euthanasia even if they are not in pain. Now, this is something that is taking place in terms of the media event in Great Britain, but don't think for a moment that this issue is isolated there or that this argument isn't also found here. Baroness Warnock, by the way, is one of the most influential people worldwide on biomedical ethics. It was she who wrote the report that basically allowed the test tube baby experimentation in Great Britain. It was she who has written some of the most recent reports on issues of biomedical ethics, and it is she who now calls for both allowing persons who have this kind of dementia to give an advance directive that they would want to be euthanized if they should lose their mental faculties, and she's calling for the power of those loved ones to go ahead, and this is her phrase, I'm reading it exactly from her statement, put others down, end quote. Now, that sounds like the kind of language used of animals now being used of human beings. We're going to talk about this on the Albert Mohler Program. This is something that affects virtually every family because I can't think of a family that hasn't had some loved one in advanced years suffering from some level of dementia. Is it right? Is it moral? Is it responsible to talk about simply euthanizing them because they're taking up too much time and attention and money? Folks, I promise you, this is where the argument's going, that this is where the logic in this culture is going. You begin to measure lives. On the one hand, you say, here's how the life contributes to society. And then you look at the other side and you say, this is what this life costs us. The moment you begin to enter into that calculation, let me tell you, you are on a very perverse line of argument because you're going to try to figure out how much this person is worth in contribution and whether that is equal to how much that person is costing. For children, you simply say, well, they're not contributing much now, but it's potential. So we're going to invest in them and hope for a return eventually. But when it gets to the elderly, you start looking at that benefit and cost kind of a formula, and you're going to quickly come to the conclusion, if you're following this line of perverse argument, look, these people aren't contributing that much anymore. They're costing a great deal. By any cost-benefit analysis, on simple economic terms, put them down. Euthanize them. Folks, I'm telling you, that's where this argument is going. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. This is the place where we're going to talk about this not on the basis of an economic cost-benefit analysis, because at the very starting point of our conversation, we understand we're talking about human beings made in the image of God. And we're talking about human life being an inestimable gift. And we'll talk about what it means for us to confront this kind of issue in today's culture. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And invite you to join us and really be a part of this conversation, because this does, even more than some other issues may appear so, this does affect every single family. If not now, then soon. If not sooner than later, it's going to get to your family. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that issue in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news, my website at albertmohler.com. Earlier today, I posted an article entitled Bioethics in the 2008 Presidential Campaign. Nancy Gibbs at Time Magazine is a columnist that I read regularly, and I don't always agree with her. In fact, oftentimes I disagree with her, but I have to say, I think she's written an outstanding column in this week's edition of Time Magazine, and she does so in a very even-handed way, which in the midst of a political campaign season dealing with these issues is a pretty significant achievement. So hats off to her for that. But this is what Time Magazine says under her title for her essay. It says this: life and death. Advances in science are altering what it means to be human. So why aren't the candidates talking about it? Well, she suggests that both of the candidates should be asked certain common questions, but she begins her article by posing questions directly to both Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain individually. This is what she says to Barack Obama. Democrats have long argued for greater reproductive freedom. Do you think that this should include the right to choose the sex of your child? The same genetic tests that screen for terrible diseases could, in theory, target many other predispositions. What if prospective parents could screen for short or shy or gay or blonde? This is a largely unregulated universe of treatment. Should it be? That's the question that Nancy Gibbs posed to Barack Obama, and she really has him in a very tight place. Because Barack Obama, well, you recall the Saddleback Civil Forum on the presidency. You recall the Democratic platform adopted in Denver. You recall the statements that he's made in support of Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade says that a woman has a right to an abortion. Here's one of the mottos of the pro-choice movement: anywhere, anytime, for any reason. Well, what if that reason is because she doesn't want to have a girl baby? How are feminists going to respond to the fact that when people have the right to sex selection abortions, they take that right, and in more cases than not, they choose to abort a baby girl in order to have a baby boy? But Nancy Gibbs goes on and pushes other issues. She says the same genetic tests that screen for terrible diseases, by the way, she seems to assume that that would include something like Down syndrome, she says, could in theory target many other predispositions. What if prospective parents could screen for short or gay or short or shy or gay or blonde? Well, that's a good question to pose to Barack Obama. Is there any circumstance in which you believe that an abortion would be categorically wrong? You see, you have to believe that given almost any kind of moral instinct, he's going to have to say, yes, there are some situations in which they'll be wrong. But the moment you say that any abortion is wrong for any reason, you are in direct collision with Roe v. Wade, which he says he wants to unqualifyingly support. So that's a great question. I think Nancy Gibbs really got to the point there. She addresses a question to Senator John McCain. Here's what she says. About 8,000 people may die this year waiting for organ transplants. Do you think the free market should include kidneys? You've said human rights begin at conception, but fertility clinics create excess embryos that are frozen and often discarded, which you favored using for research. So are some embryos more equal than others? End quote. Now, here again, Nancy Gibbs has rather brilliantly constructed her question. She thinks that she has Senator John McCain in a vice, and I think she's coming very close. Let's take the first issue. It's something that, to my knowledge, the candidates have not spoken to. It has to do with the collision between the need for organs and their ethical transplantation and the realities of the free market. She's basically saying here, look, 8,000 people are going to die this year. Many of those, if not most of those lives, could have been saved if there had been donor organs. But people aren't donating their organs. So is a free market solution the answer here? Do you allow people to pre-sell their organs so that they have an economic incentive to sell their organs before they die and then allow them to be used in transplantation? Do you allow living persons, for instance, who have two kidneys and conceivably could use only one to for a profit, sell a kidney? Now, I think most Americans recoil at this, and I don't care how much of a free market economist you are, I think you will recognize that there are significant questions here. First of all, there's a justice question. Wants to keep the poor from becoming basically organ farms. There is a coercion and consent question here. How do you know that persons are actually giving consent if they're under, for instance, economic duress? Do they sell an organ to avoid the bankruptcy of their home and the financial ruin of their family? That raises a great question of justice to me. And then you have, on the other hand, the fact that there are people who are dying and would gladly pay whatever it would cost for an organ, would gladly incentivize someone economically for a donated organ. But then you also have the big question, would only the rich then have access to these donor organs and not the poor? Nancy Gibbs thinks she has John McCain in a vice there because he is very much committed to the free market. But that's the kind of question I think is brilliantly asked, and will be interesting. We will be interested to see if that very interesting question is actually addressed or answered by these candidates. By the way, Nancy Gibbs went on to raise the stem cell issue, human embryonic stem cell issue, with Senator McCain, asking him if all embryos are equal because, after all, he suggests that now, and this is a good thing, I want to say I appreciate John McCain for this. He's certainly moving in the direction of opposing all human embryonic stem cell research, but he said nothing about the fact that embryos the same virtual embryos are being, and here's a quotation mark, wasted in fertility clinics. And this is where I think not only John McCain, but an awful lot of American evangelicals failed to be consistent. Because if you believe that human life begins at conception, as I do, then you believe that every fertilized embryo is made in the image of God, whether that embryo is in a stem cell experiment or in a fertility clinic. Well, hats off to Nancy Gibbs for raising a good set of questions. And there's more in her article and more in mine. You'll find it online at www.albertmoeller.com. We're going to come back to talk about this argument being made by Baroness Thatcher in Great Britain that people with senility, Alzheimer's disease, mental dementia, at advanced ages should be euthanized because they're taking up too much space, too much attention, and costing too much money. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. Coast to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me announce that my newest book, Desire and Deceit, is out from Crossway Books, from Multnomah and Random House Books, and it is now out, and we are glad that they have provided some copies for us to give to callers of this program. The first two on-air callers today will receive a copy of my book, Desire and Deceit. It's a book about the issues related to sexuality from a Christian worldview perspective. It's really exposing the lies of the new sexual tolerance. And I'm really pleased that the book is out. I think it's very timely, especially given the volatility of so many of these issues right now in the public square. I think it's a book that will help a lot of people. I think it will help parents think about talking about these issues with their kids. I think it'll help college, high school, university students. I think it will help a lot of people, pastors and church leaders, to think through these issues. At least I hope so. It's really an effort to try to look at many of the sexual messages and sexual arguments, or the arguments about sexuality being made in the culture today, and really try to take them apart from a worldview analysis. And some of the material is pretty bracing, just in terms of what the world's throwing at us. But we as Christians are called to give an answer. And I hope you'll find the answers helpful in Desire and Deceit. And with everything else that I write, just know I want to hear from you. When you read the book, tell me what you're thinking of it. It's available through Amazon.com and other online and local booksellers. Desire and Deceit, now out in bookstores. The first two on-air callers today will receive an autographed copy of the book. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about Baroness Warnock's statement that those with advanced dementia should be euthanized. And the article of record here is from the Telegraph, which is one of the major London newspapers. And I just want to read to you what it says in the beginning, because how Martin Beckford, who's a social affairs correspondent for The Telegraph, sets this up, tells us a great deal about how shocking this is, even to people in Great Britain who are probably past being shocked about many things when it comes to Baroness Warnock. Here's what she said. He said, the veteran government advisor, that is Baroness Warnock, said pensioners in mental decline are, quote, wasting people's lives because of the care they require and should be allowed to opt for euthanasia even if they're not in pain. She insisted that there was, quote, nothing wrong, end quote, with people being helped to die for the sake of their loved ones or society. The 84-year-old added that she hoped people would soon be, quote, licensed to put others down, end quote, if they are unable to look after themselves. Her comments came in a magazine interview, and we're still working at getting a copy of that full interview. But we've got enough to know we've got to talk about this. Her comments have been denounced by many in Great Britain and beyond. Last year in Great Britain, a law was passed known as the Mental Capacity Act. It gives legal force to living wills so patients can appoint an attorney to tell doctors when their hospital food and water should be removed. Now, Baroness Warnock is taking this a step far further. According to this report, in Great Britain alone, there are 700,000 people with degenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's. By 2026, experts predict there'll be 1 million dementia sufferers in Britain, costing the National Health Service an estimated £35 billion. And you're talking there about $70 billion a year. Now, this is what Lady Warnock said. She said, if you're demented, you're wasting people's lives, your family's lives, and you're wasting the resources of the National Health Service, end quote. So if you get to a kill line, that's where it is. If you're looking for what is at the baseline of Baroness Warnock's worldview on this. Let me return to read that sentence. If you're demented, you're wasting people's lives, your family's lives, and you're wasting the resources of the National Health Service. End quote. I hope you're shocked by that. I was shocked by it this morning when I read the article. I sent it immediately to my radio producer, and I said, Matt, we've got to talk about this, because this is the kind of issue that gets right to the heart of the worldview crisis of our age. If you want to see the collision between the Christian worldview and a secular worldview, look no further. Now, there are plenty of people who would follow a more secular worldview who are not where Baroness Warnock is. But my argument is they are not there yet, because it's Baroness Warnock who's actually thought the issue through. She's actually operating out of a completely consistent secular and atheistic worldview here. So let me try to track that through with you. You begin with the assumption that human beings are either, according to the Christian worldview, special creatures made in the image of God, or, according to the secular worldview, highly evolved accidental organisms. If you believe that human beings are nothing more than highly evolved accidental organisms, then you can negotiate the value and the particulars of how you will define human life. This is exactly what happened in Weimar Germany before the rise of the Third Reich, when they came up with the category of life unworthy of life. They didn't deny that Jews and homosexuals and Jehovah's Witnesses and people with all kinds of dementia and deformities and gypsies, they didn't say that they weren't alive. They said that they weren't worthy of life. Now, they didn't begin with that long a list. They began with what they thought was more obvious, because, again, they began with a cost-benefit analysis. In the Christian worldview, there is no cost-benefit analysis. We cannot enter into that conversation. Why? It's because we believe that every single human life is of infinite value, whereas the secular worldview has to believe that some lives are more worthy than others. Because when you define human life and human dignity from a secular viewpoint, you have to come up with a list of criteria that must be met for someone to be human. That's why you have someone like Peter Singer at Princeton University, who teaches bioethics, another very consistent secularist, who says that, for instance, killing young children before they reach the ability to communicate with language should be allowable, because the ability to communicate with language is a necessary component of what it means to be human. So if you can't do that yet, you're not human yet. At the other end of life, Baroness Warnock is saying, if you have lost the ability to communicate, if you have lost the ability to be in conversation with people, if you have lost the ability to be cognitively engaged, then you are no longer worthy of life. You don't deserve to live. And she presses the argument further by saying, you're wasting money. You're taking up a hospital bed. You're wasting your family's time. You're wasting the resources of the National Health Service. Now, if you're going to enter into a cost-benefit analysis, folks, you can get there real fast, because nursing homes are not a fantastic investment in the future. People can say, well, children don't contribute much yet, but they might in the future, so this kind of a futures market. We will invest now in hopes that they will be able to contribute later. But when it comes to the nursing home, you're not able to make that same argument. And so Baroness Warnock's argument comes immediately to mind. If human life is negotiable, if we're not even sure that that every single human life is of value, then we're going to begin to decide this life is more value than that life. And keeping this life alive is going to take resources away from making this life happy and fulfilled. And that's the kind of argument we will make. Baroness Warnock said it in words that are absolutely unflinching, unblinking, and unmistakable. She said, if you're demented, you're wasting people's lives, your family's lives, and you're wasting the resources of the National Health Service. She went on to say, I'm absolutely fully in agreement with the argument that if pain is insufferable, then someone should be given help to die. But I feel there's a wider argument that if somebody absolutely desperately wants to die because they're a burden to their family or to the state, I think they should be allowed to die. Then Baroness Warnock goes on from there to say, if people have already reached that point, their family members should be able to decide it for them and, to use her phrase, put them down. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The first two on-air callers of the program will receive a free autographed copy of my new book, Desire to See, just out this week from Multnomah Press. We'll be back with your conversation in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about Baroness Warnock in Great Britain, the government's most famous advisor on biomedical ethics. This is the woman that wrote the report that allowed the test tube baby experimentation back in the 1970s. She has enormous influence in British society and beyond. She's widely quoted in medical ethics in terms of the United States, and that should scare you when you consider her latest argument, which is that people with advanced senility or dementia should be, to use her indelicate phrase, quote, put down. This is what she had to say. The most concentrated line of her argument is this. She says, if you're demented, you're wasting people's lives and your family's lives, and you're wasting the resources of the National Health Service, end quote. So in other words, get out of the way. Now, she continued by even saying that the loved ones of someone with dementia should be able to, quote, put them down. I want to read to you again from her words. She said, if you have an advance directive appointing someone else to act on your behalf, if you become incapacitated, then I think there is a hope that your advocate may say that you would not want to wish in this condition, so please try to help her die. I think that's the way the future will go, said Baroness Warnock. Putting it rather brutally, those are her words, she acknowledged, she's putting this rather brutally, you'd be licensing people to put others down, end quote. Now, the response to this has been pretty hot, as you might imagine. For instance, Neil Hunt, the chief executive of the Alzheimer's Society in Great Britain, said, I am shocked and amazed that Baroness Warnock would disregard the value of the lives of people with dementia so callously. With the right care, a person can have a good quality of life very late into dementia. To suggest that people with dementia shouldn't be entitled to that quality of life, or that they should feel that they have some sort of duty to kill themselves, is nothing short of barbaric. A conservative member of parliament for Mid-Bedfordshire, Nadine Dorries, said, I believe it's extremely irresponsible and unnerving for someone in Baroness Warnock's position to put forward arguments in favor of euthanasia for those who suffer from dementia and other neurological illnesses. Because of her previous experiences and well-known standing on contentious moral issues, Baroness Warnock automatically gives moral authority to what are entirely immoral viewpoints. So two very strong responses there, which are encouraging in themselves. We need to have you join the conversation by calling us at 877-893-8255. Some of you no doubt have parents or loved ones who are in advanced dementia or Alzheimer's or senility, as it was previously called. No doubt you have known someone as grandparents or extended family who've been in this situation. Perhaps you know this situation all too close to home, and thus this is not just an academic debate coming from Great Britain. It's something that you have just had to think about in terms of your own caretaking for your family. What do you think about this? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The first two on-air callers will receive a copy of my brand-new book, an autographed copy of Desire and Deceit. Let's go first to Patty, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Patty.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mohler. My father, God love him, passed away February 2nd from the effects of Lewy body dementia. And, yes, there were times in there when we thought, oh, man, Kevorkian's got it right. But the last 4 days that we spent with him were some of the most precious time in my life. There was conversations that went on between us and people who came to visit that were so healing and wonderful, and we were so blessed. And he peacefully went home, and we thank God for that. And She's wrong. I'm sorry, she's wrong. That would not have honored my father, even though he probably would have said he didn't want us to go through what we went through. It would not have honored him to do anything less than what we did.
Patty, thank you so much for that first-person testimony. And to be sure to get your information to the personnel there in Louisville so we can get the copy of the book to you. But let me just mention that the argument you're making here as a first-person argument is very honest, and I really appreciate that, because you said there are moments in which you wondered if this kind of argument didn't sound right, because you were dealing with the hard, hard challenges of taking care of someone with this kind of condition. You're also honest in saying something else, Patty, that I think we all need to hear, and that is you said that if asked, your father probably would have said that he did not want to put you through that. And you can understand what he would have meant by that. But let's be thankful that your father was not lord over his own life. God had a purpose even for those final days, which you have spoken to so beautifully. And the reality is that even his well-intentioned desire not to cause you the pain of all of the care and the sacrifice you had to give, even though that was well-intentioned and probably would have crossed his mind, it would have been nonetheless wrong, because we are not lords of our lives. We do not know what God intends for us in every single day. And the fact is that God's glory is showing in every single human being at every single stage of life. You said one other very important thing, Patty. When you use the word honor, speaking of parents, that's a biblical mandate. You certainly cannot honor your parents when you say to them, you're demented, get out of the way. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. And with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, you can picture how this kind of argument takes shape. You can picture someone looking at, say, the cost, just the financial figures involved in keeping someone alive who has advanced Alzheimer's disease, and you know this person is in the end stages of life, not the beginning stages of life, and doing a cost-benefit analysis, it's very easy to look at those figures, because you're just looking at numbers on a page and say, this is an inexcusable expense. If we took that money and we used it for the care of children, for other good things in society, would make a much greater impact than keeping these people alive. Baroness Warnock, who is one of the chief biomedical ethicists in the world in terms of influence. A woman who is one of the most formative and formidable figures in terms of British life. A woman who I believe has had a horrible impact on society over the last several decades. She is now making the argument that people who have advanced dementia should be put down. That's her expression, should be euthanized because they are simply too expensive. She says this, if you're demented, you're wasting people's lives, your family's lives, and you're wasting the resources of the National Health Service. She's actually calling for caregivers to be licensed, quote, to put people down. She acknowledges that that's putting it brutally, but that's the argument. And my argument is that once you begin to enter into a cost-benefit analysis of human life, you're going to end up with Baroness Warnock. You're going to end up right in her corner, unless you just arbitrarily decide to be inconsistent. Because if you're going to do a cost-benefit analysis on human life, you're going to end up deciding some lives aren't worth it. That's just implied in the entire project. And if you are operating out of a secular point of view, I don't see how you don't get there. I think that's just the structure of the argument. The Christian worldview begins in a very different place, affirming the sanctity, the holiness, the dignity, the value of every single human life at every single stage. And thus, those operating out of a Christian worldview cannot enter into the calculation of a cost-benefit analysis when it comes to life. Let's go to Jennifer calling from Richfield, Connecticut, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I lost my mom a year ago to Alzheimer's, and she was a young woman, so the disease was very rapid and ravaging, and my dad took care of her till the end, and I can't tell you how many people told us that they were so inspired by watching how my father was so tender and devoted and committed to her that it inspired them and improved their marriage by just watching him take care of her.
Well, that's a really sweet testimony, Jennifer. I appreciate that. And you are dealing with one of those hard cases, just in terms of your own word of personal reflection here, because when Alzheimer's does hit early in life, it often is just absolutely and quickly devastating. And you have, in such close contrast, a person who was so healthy and now is so unhealthy, was so engaged, so intelligent, so lively, so conversational, and now is no longer any of those things. And that's why it's so easy, if we're operating out of a secular viewpoint and worldview, to say, look, this life just isn't worth what it was before. And if you have a sliding scale of the value of life, then you're going to just decide certain lives are more worthy than others. And this gets right back to the kind of awful stuff that used to be put in values clarification tests back when I was in middle school, and that liberal postmodernist experiment in medical argument, a moral argument was made. For instance, the lifeboat kind of test. You know, you can only have four seats on a lifeboat. There's six people. One's a doctor, one's a lawyer, one's a bank thief. You know, and then so who do you save? Well, you immediately begin to find out what you think is important. You start walking through the six people and you say, well, this one's more valuable than that. You know, a doctor be more valuable to have because he could care for the others. Well, that's exactly the kind of argument you can't even enter. And see, I remember sitting in an eighth grade classroom in which I said, I don't think we should even be talking about this question because this assumes we have the right to decide how much people are worth. And the teacher shot back and said, well, you're going to have to make that decision someday. And I'm thinking, no, I don't. No, I don't. That's a ridiculous setup. And I was probably a bit precocious as a 13-year-old. I hope I was respectful. But nonetheless, I mean, that was just categorically wrong. You shouldn't ask a bunch of 13-year-olds, are you going to say the doctor or the bank thief? That's just not an appropriate kind of moral argument. But that's the kind of argument you're going to find yourself right in the thick of if you accept the secular worldview and its belief. It's a fundamental belief that human life is nothing more than a highly evolved form of conscious life. That human beings are nothing more than highly evolved cosmic accidents. If you believe that, then you're going to say, well, some are more evolved than others. Some are more developed than others. Some are more educated. Some are more articulate. Some are more creative. Some are more athletic. These are all the things that perhaps we would want for ourselves or for someone else. And it's very easy to simply say, look, this person doesn't have the ability to communicate. Therefore, according to Peter Singer, they are not human. He or she is not human. Or you could have the kind of argument that comes down from people who say, look, this is a person who can no longer contribute to society. He can no longer, make cabinets. She can no longer take care of the farm. You know, you could just go down the long argument. No longer can this person contribute in terms of the assembly line. No longer can this person contribute as a medical doctor. No longer are they making any contribution. They can't even care for the children in the home. Now they are a net drain upon the family's finances and time and attention. They don't contribute anything. I wonder if we were noticing what both of our callers said today, both in first-person testimony. They didn't put it exactly this way, but their argument was one speaking of father and one speaking of mother. They were both still making a contribution. What was that contribution? It's the contribution of honor, the contribution of legacy, the contribution of presence. Both of them spoke of those last days as an opportunity to see the contribution of this person, even at the opportunity of natural death. Folks, we can't buy into this line of argument. And it's very interesting when you look at this and you consider that this argument has created so much controversy in Great Britain. Here's the question. Does the controversy come too late? In other words, has Britain, in terms of its slide into a secular society, passed some point of no return? Or will this kind of argument be something of a wake-up call? That question should be posed to the United States as well. What if one of our major biomedical ethicists made this kind of argument? I guarantee you there are people right now in our universities making this argument. When they make it, how will the American people respond? My suggestion is the first line of issue should be, how will American Christians respond? We can't enter into the formula. We have to confront the question with the lie that stands behind it. We have to affirm that every single human being is made in the image of God. Right back. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're broadcasting to you live today from Nashville, Tennessee. A few times a year we're down here for meetings. We're able to broadcast from the studios here for Faith and Family. As always, want to express appreciation to Matt Hawkins and Amber Chesser for making it possible for us to broadcast so well here. And, of course, this is the host studio for my colleague at Salem Communications, Richard Land. And so we're glad to be here and glad to talk about things that matter from a Christian worldview perspective, because the issues never stop. They just keep coming at us from so many different directions. At my website today at albertmohler.com, I also published a book review at the reading list. You can find it. It's on Eleanor Burkett's new biography of Golda Meir. I have to tell you, This is one of the most fascinating biographies I have read in a very long time. It speaks, of course, about Israel's indomitable prime minister, first woman political leader of a Western nation in terms of head of government. She served as the prime minister of Israel from 1969 to 1974, and those were some of the most tumultuous years in the history of Israel. She was Israel's Jewish grandmother, who was known as the Iron Lady long before Margaret Thatcher became prime minister of Great Britain. But I really, until reading this biography, a very fine biography by Eleanor Burkett, I really didn't understand how Golda Meir played such an interesting part in terms of the development of Israel as a nation, the contentious divisions, and why her story is so much a tragedy as much as just a fascinating glimpse of a leader in the 21st, as in the 20th century. I mean, after all, this is a woman who was born in the Russian Empire, was raised, how many Americans know this, was raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, immigrated to Palestine, as it was then known, in 1921, became a part of the movement to bring Israel to birth, and then a part of the government. But it's a really conflicted story as well, because Golda Meir was way on the left of where most Americans would consider a moderate line. She had an abortion because she thought that the baby was simply incompatible with her obligations to be so busy as a Zionist. Her marriage was a shambles. She had children to which she gave almost no attention. It's a sad story. It's a personal tragedy, and in some ways it's a national tragedy because she left her country in a real political crisis as well. But she was, at one point in history, certainly from 1969 to 1974, one of the most admired women in the world, and she helped to create the modern consciousness of the nation of Israel. She was supposed to be a caretaker prime minister, but she ended up taking the world by storm. And by the end of her premiership in 1974, Israel as a nation was known virtually all over the globe as a people of strength led by a woman of strength. You'll find the article, the book review of Golda by Eleanor Burkett, at www.albertmoeller.com, where you will find a lot of free resources. Don't forget my new book out this week, Desire and Deceit, Confronting the New Sexual Tolerance, Alpha Multnomah Books. Back tomorrow to talk about a Christian understanding of this economic crisis. Join me on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.